Hello, I'm Laura, and you're listening to Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. So, it's February, the days are getting longer, the weather should be getting warmer, another winter is coming to an end, and so is flu season. Last year, in 2018, the flu season made headlines for being one of the worst ever for the NHS, with the highest number of influenza-related hospital admissions since 2010. This year has been markedly different. But why is there so much variation? Today, we will be speaking with two influenza experts, Dr. John McCauley, Director of the World Health Organization's Collaborating Centre for Reference and Research on Influenza at the Francis Crick Institute, and Dr. Otmar Engelhardt, Principal Scientist in the Division of Virology at the National Institute for Biological Standards and Control. John, please could you explain a little about the work your team does at the Francis Crick Institute?
We work within a WHO network of laboratories called the Global Influenza Surveillance and Response System that comprises 144 national influenza centres around the world. And these laboratories share viruses with collaborating centres, of which we are one of six. And we carry out detailed antigenic and genetic analysis of the influenza viruses that they collect from their countries. And the aim of this work is to do global virological surveillance to build up a global picture of the properties of influenza viruses as they evolve and spread around the world. And the reason we have to do this is because influenza viruses evolve and we need updated vaccines to keep up with the viruses as they move on.
Otmar, how does the National Institute of Biological Standards and Control contribute to the development of the influenza vaccine?
We are part of the Global Influenza Surveillance and Response System, the World Health Organization. And within that system, we are one of the four ERLs, the Essential Regulatory Laboratories. So we take samples from people who have volunteered to receive the vaccine and have donated blood after that. And we look whether the antibodies that were elicited by that vaccine react well with currently circulating viruses. We are also one of the laboratories that make so-called candidate vaccine viruses. So these are the viruses that manufacturers use to actually produce the vaccine. If you take a run-of-the-mill influenza virus that you isolate from a patient, it usually doesn't grow very well in cell culture or in eggs, which is the usual production substrate. And so often, especially for egg production, you need to modify the viruses to make them grow better. These modified viruses are called candidate vaccine viruses, and we make those, and we then distribute them to manufacturers for production. And then after this, so once manufacturers have started producing vaccine using these candidate vaccine viruses, we make reference reagents, which are needed to measure the antigen content in the vaccine. And they are used both by the manufacturers who need them for getting the right amount of antigen into the vaccine, but also by independent control laboratories that test these vaccines before they go onto the market. And then finally, for the UK, so we are also one of these independent control labs that test vaccine batches before they go onto the market.
So there are two types of influenza virus that cause seasonal epidemics. That is, the flu that is usually spreading and causing disease in the winter. These are type A and type B. Type A is further split into subtypes. You may have heard of some of these, such as H1N1 or H3N2. These are named based on the antigens on the surface of the virus, and the circulating subtypes are different each year. Type B consists of two main lineages, the Yamagata lineage, which you may remember from last year, and the Victoria lineage. The vaccine from previous years might not protect against the flu for the upcoming year. Scientists have to develop new flu vaccines every single year. And to make things even more difficult, the virus is constantly mutating as it evolves, meaning the vaccine needs to be continually updated to stay effective. John, this year's flu season has so far been very different to last year. Is this because the 2018-19 vaccine is more effective?
Now, last year, we had quite a long influenza season, predominated by actually two viruses. They were the influenza B Yamagata viruses and the H3N2 viruses. The H3N2 viruses particularly have effects, particularly in the elderly, who are quite susceptible to these viruses. And so that will have had an impact. And we were somewhat surprised to see quite such an impact of an influenza B virus, which normally we would expect not to be have such a public health impact as it did last year. We don't really know why that is. So that was the cause of the big problems that we had within the United Kingdom last year. Now this year, within Western Europe and many other parts of the world, but not all parts of the world, H1N1 viruses are predominating. Now, H1N1 viruses seem to have less impact, but for particularly the younger under 65 group, it can have still have significant impact, cause severe disease amongst this group of people. And so whilst the public health impact may be lower, the impact on any individual who catches it can still be serious. And so that's what we're seeing this year. But as I said, not all countries have got that. For example, Turkey, Israel, Iran, Egypt have got H3N2 viruses this year.
Why was the 2017-18 flu season so bad?
It was probably bad because it was an H3N2 year plus an influenza B year coming on top of each other. It was quite unusual, actually, that the influenza B virus came up as early as it did. Normally, the influenza B viruses follow the influenza A peak, but in 2017-2018, they seemed to peak together. That might have been the effect, but when we have an H3N2 year, it's always challenging from the public health perspective, just because of the vulnerability of the elderly.
And why is flu vaccination important? Who does it benefit the most?
Well, flu vaccination is important for multiple reasons. The elderly are particularly susceptible to influenza, and basically the best option for dealing with that is vaccination. Now, if we have a vaccine that's 50% effective, it may seem that any individual, that's just a 50-50 chance of success. But in the population level, that's half the amount of influenza around, half the pressure on the hospitals. And so we have to look at it at the population level. And, you know, so it's benefiting the individual, but it's also benefiting the population level and therefore NHS resources and the like. So it's important for that. I've sort of concentrated in the past on the elderly, but we shouldn't forget those at risk in the under 64 or under 65s. And also the children. The childhood vaccine, which is delivered in UK as a live attenuated vaccine, is a program that's been rolling out for a few years now. It looks very effective. It looks like it's doing what the plan was, that it may well be actually by protecting the children from flu, we might be able to be protecting the whole of the population from the impact of flu. We still wait to see, you know, that that's going to be consistent year on year, but it's the evidence is looking good. We also need to consider particular at-risk groups, particularly pregnant women. Really, I think that they are recommended to have vaccine, and I would encourage anyone pregnant to have the vaccine.
Each year, the World Health Organization hosts two strain selection meetings to discuss the composition of the influenza vaccine for the upcoming season. Developing and producing 400 million doses of vaccine takes time, though, and scientists need to be given as much notice as possible. The WHO strain selection meeting for the Northern Hemisphere takes place in February, this year in Beijing. There is another meeting in September to decide the formulation of the vaccine for the Southern Hemisphere. After the strains have been chosen for inclusion in the upcoming vaccine, Otmar's work begins. Otmar, how are vaccines made?
The majority of influenza vaccines currently are produced in eggs. And in principle, that's a very simple process. You inject an egg with an influenza virus, ideally with a virus that grows well in egg, a candidate vaccine virus, and it amplifies in there. And then you harvest the allantoic fluid of the egg and purify the virus out of it. And then there's further processing going on. The virus is inactivated or killed so that it cannot cause an infection anymore. And then usually further purified, split into components and sometimes further purified. That is the main process for influenza vaccine production. There's also cell culture production, which is newer, but there are a few companies and a few vaccines available from cell culture production. It's the beginning, the production step that's different. So it's produced in tissue culture, but then the inactivation and purification is very similar to the egg-produced vaccines. And more recently, there has also been a recombinant vaccine, which is a completely different process where through recombinant DNA technology and a baculovirus expression system, just the HA, the hemagglutinin antigen, that is the crucial antigen in the vaccine, is being produced, and that is used as the vaccine. And there's no influenza virus as such involved in the production. Manufacturing is done by vaccine manufacturers, by usually commercial companies, although in some countries they also have state-owned manufacturers. That is independent of us. What we provide is some input materials, the candidate vaccine viruses, some materials that they need for testing, reference reagents, standards. And then we do testing at the very end of the process when the vaccine manufacturer has produced the final vaccine, has tested it internally. They then send it to an independent control laboratory like ours, where it is tested. And only after that testing has passed and a certificate is issued, can the vaccine go onto the market.
And how do you inactivate the virus that you collect from these eggs or the cell culture? Is it by heat?
So the inactivation is through chemical means. If you heated the virus, you would probably destroy its antigenicity, and that wouldn't be good because then it wouldn't induce the immune response you want. So the inactivation happens with formaldehyde or beta-propiolactone, two well-established chemical inactivation processes that have been used for many years or decades.
How many strains are usually included in the vaccine?
Well, vaccines used to be trivalent. They used to contain three strains. But because there are two influenza B lineages, which usually co-circulate when you look at it from a global picture, so one lineage may circulate, say, in Europe and another in Asia at the same time. And it's very difficult to predict which lineage would be the best suited for the upcoming winter. So then some companies switched over to quadrivalent or tetravalent vaccines that contain four strains, so that this problem of having to decide which B lineage to choose didn't exist anymore. But there are still both types of vaccines on the market.
And what strains were included in this season's flu vaccine compared to the 2017-18 vaccine?
So this season's vaccine contains two strains that are different from last winter's vaccine. So the many vaccines these days contain four components, an AH1N1 component, an AH3N2 component, and two influenza B viruses, because there are two lineages of B viruses. The AH1N1 component remained unchanged from last winter. The AH3N2 component changed, so that was one change. And then one of the two B lineages also changed. There was a new group of influenza B viruses emerging that was antigenically very different from the ones in the previous vaccine. Two changes as compared to last winter.
So two strains of the four are different. Is that fairly standard?
I think it's quite common that one or two strains change over a year, but it is unpredictable. There may be more or fewer.
And that's all we have time for this month. Thanks so much for listening. And a huge thank you to Dr. John McCauley and Dr. Otmar Engelhardt for making the time to speak with me for this episode. If you've enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you could give us a review on iTunes or wherever it is that you get your podcast from. To find out more about the influenza vaccine, why not read our blog, Deja Flu? Can science help the NHS cope with the annual burden of respiratory infections? I'll leave a link in the podcast description below. Also, don't forget to follow the Microbiology Society on Twitter at microbiosoc.